are tuning in and sounding off. Call in now. 715-845-2155. WSAU Feedback on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Good morning and welcome to WSAU Feedback. I'm Meg Ellefson. Thank you for joining me this morning. So I'm doing a little happy dance in studio right now, and hopefully none of my other guests are listening because I've got my favorite guest on the air this morning. I'm super excited to have Dr. Pierre Corey joining me again. Dr. Corey, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Meg. Good morning. Thanks.
So I know we talked off air. You're in Texas, and I made a little joke, don't mess with Texas. And then I said, I'm gonna hold my other comment, don't mess with Dr. Pierre Corey, who is an ICU and lung specialist and has, when I was planning for this program this morning, Dr. Corey, I looked you up on Wikipedia, and I don't know if you looked yourself up, but in December of 2020, you erroneously claimed that the antiparasitic medication ivermectin was a, quote, wonder drug with miraculous effectiveness against COVID-19. Would you still stand behind that statement?
Oh, I mean, without question. I mean, it's proven so. You wouldn't know that if you live in the United States, but certainly around the world we have just incredible the accomplishments. For instance, the North Indian state of Uttar Pradesh, they essentially eradicated COVID from a state of 241 million people with using ivermectin systematically throughout the state. And they have almost zero cases now amongst 241 million people.
Well, and I mean, I guess I'm trying to put myself, there's only one of me, although sometimes it seems like there's Larry, Curly, and Moe, but I'm trying to put myself in the position of someone who's skeptical of that, you know, of that statement. And, you know, we've heard, of course, from the media that, who pays attention to the mainstream media anymore? I don't. But, that this is a horse dewormer and, you know, people are buying it up from these, you know, farm supply stores. And, you know, there's a distinct difference between the dosage for a 1,000-pound animal versus a human being, correct?
I mean, clearly. I mean, it's unfortunate. It's just a tax on the drug ivermectin. They try to conflate it with an animal drug. I mean, it is used in animals, but the discoverers won the Nobel Prize for its impacts in human diseases. It's very much a human drug, and to conflate it is willful, and that they're trying to dissuade people from using it, and that's what the great sadness is of this pandemic, is that there's a war on repurposed drugs. They can't have repurposed drugs in the marketplace, and so if you find something that's cheap and off patent, they just can't do it. I mean, the entire system is built on the support of for-profit drugs, and so that's what they're doing. They're trying to kill ivermectin. They already killed hydroxychloroquine last year, and they're doing the same thing to ivermectin, and it's a shame because people's lives would be saved.
Well, and you recently tweeted, and I think you, I think that there was a lot of hoopla maybe a few weeks ago about that there were a number of United States Congress members, including staff and family members, that were treated with ivermectin.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, so, a colleague, I mean, someone I know inside Congress has, many of them have been treated with ivermectin. And it's not that they've been silent about it. I mean, I would say most of them I came to learn afterwards, most of them are on the right. They have spoken out, many of them around the emphasis on early treatment and the need for early treatment. You know, this idiotic policy we have of literally stay home, wait till your lips turn blue, and then come to the ER. It's just absurd. And so many people have spoken out around the need for early treatment, and many have been treated effectively. Like I said, you know, not one of those people treated, the staffers, family members of Congress, have gone to the hospital.
So, you know, I guess it's interesting. It's, you know, would you, I'm being funny now, or at least trying to be funny, is that it's almost like survival of the fittest, that those, you know, you mentioned those on the right are electing to, well, at least making an attempt to try these repurposed drugs and not wait until their lips are blue and not wait until they're on death's doorstep before they get some sort of treatment. They seek early treatment. And, you know, it seems to me that it would make sense for everyone to want to strive to do whatever they can to boost their immune system to ensure that they, you know, that they don't get super sick, or if they do, that there are a lot of options for them to be treated. And, you know, I guess, you know, I am talking to a physician about this, or the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. But I mean, isn't that part of the practice of medicine, is that you want to strive to find as many you know, different solutions to a problem, because every individual is different?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what many people around the world have done since the beginning. We've, you know, trial and error, they've tried different compounds, different molecules, and very quickly have learned the medicines that work. And, you know, it's not just ivermectin. And there's been at least 24 compounds that have proven effective. And if you look at our protocols, we have a number of agents on there. It's not just ivermectin, but devoid on early treatment, given the amount of these compounds that they're waiting for these big pharma conducted novel therapeutics to come out. And that's what they're doing. They're trying to ignore all of the compounds that have already been discovered by frontline doctors in order for a blockbuster drug. And it's absolutely absurd. And people are being harmed over it. It's really a tragedy. It's absolutely a tragedy.
So when you talk about the blockbuster drugs, let's talk about this new Merck COVID drug that's touted as being, you know, I don't know, the next best drug.
Yep.
The problem is that it's super expensive. I mean, is that kind of why the ivermectin, because it's so inexpensive that it hasn't been touted as a useful and effective treatment?
I mean, not kind of why. I mean, I can't think of any other reason why all of the actions against ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine occurred, except for the fact that they needed to keep the marketplace open for a novel blockbuster drug. And that one that came along, you know, I called the last couple of months, I call it Pharmageddon on ivermectin. This massive media attack with this conflation of animal and then these inflated and literally false, now completely disproven reports of people overdosing and getting sick in poison control centers. They're completely false. I mean, no one has provably died. Even in massive overdoses in history, no one has ever been proven to have died from ivermectin. And the poison control centers, literally, there's like a couple of calls. And they called it like a massive increase in calls. And so all of this has been done. And then all of a sudden, at the end of these 2 months, suddenly you see this press release of this new drug called Molnupiravir. And this drug is, whoa, I would be really scared of it. I mean, first of all, this drug has been around for 15 years. The first pharmaceutical company that owned it abandoned it, refused to bring it into the marketplace because it's what's called mutagenic. I mean, it creates mutations. How it works is it inserts itself into the viral genetic code, causes mutations so that the virus can't replicate. It also is capable of inserting itself into mammalian cells, meaning our own cells, causing mutations. And in early animal studies, they showed, like, you know, animals with skulls, missing half their skulls, or born without teeth. I mean, this causes mutations. And so much so that the last pharmaceutical company refused to bring it because they did not want to bring a mutagen into the market. And now you have Merck trying to bring it into the marketplace because it's such a massive marketplace. There's no long-term safety data. You know, the trial in which they're trying to ramrod this thing through, we haven't even seen the trial. We've seen a press release, and I've seen the description of the trial on clinicaltrials.gov. But you have to understand, they excluded almost anyone actively having sex or women of childbearing age without contraception. And so that should give you pause right there, that they are concerned about the possibility of mutations and birth defects. And so this is the one that they're trying to bring to market. And the other thing is, They did it in mild disease. They already did a big study on hospital patients. It totally failed. They terminated that study early without providing results. They said they terminated it for business reasons. What nonsense. And then two other trials just last week ended. In India, they did two trials in moderate disease, and it completely failed. Then they stopped those trials because it didn't work. So you have like it's got a sea of trials around it which failed. Now they have this one trial which they're claiming has this profound impact on hospitalization and mild disease, but we haven't even seen the study, and there's no long-term safety data on it. So this is just how the pharmaceutical industry operates, and I got to tell you, our agencies allow them to operate this way. They're complicit in allowing this kind of nonsense to be pulled on our public health.
Well, and you know, I guess what I've read is that the cost for this Merck drug is about a 4,000% markup over what it costs them to actually produce it. And so, you know, this again all leads back to the almighty dollar, comparing it to ivermectin, which I think is, I think, you know, a 10 days is $39.
Yeah, I believe the manufacturing cost for it is something like $20. They managed to contract with the U.S. government at $700 a treatment course. $700 a treatment course for a drug where I think in India they're already contracted. They're going to sell it to them for $20. I just don't understand the economics. I'm not an expert on it, but it nothing surprises me anymore about what they're doing here. It's just beyond credulity.
Well, and so let's, you know, speaking of beyond credulity, let's talk about the hospital protocols for treating COVID when you are on death's doorstep. And, you know, we've talked, you know, I shared a story of someone here locally, and I had this gentleman passed away, but his daughter was on the program a number of weeks ago and described their challenges with the healthcare system here that was treating him and their refusal to even provide him with, they were asking for vitamin D3 and
yep,
high doses of C, and they were told no. Is this something that you're seeing in the hospitals in which you are treating patients?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, all across the country. I mean, I have trainees everywhere. I have colleagues everywhere, and they're all on lockdown. I mean, they are no longer allowed to practice medicine. That's not an overstatement. They're no longer allowed to look at data, look at something, make risk-benefit analysis, and employ a therapy or a course of therapy which they deem reasonable in their clinical judgment and experience. No. With COVID, you absolutely have to follow the protocol, and the protocol is absolutely limited. It's an anemic dose of corticosteroids when we have wealth of data showing that higher doses lead to much better outcomes. And then it's this joke, which is remdesivir, which is what I call molnupiravir is remdesivir 2.0, because remdesivir is an ineffective drug. It's purportedly an antiviral, and they're using it in the hospital. You don't use antivirals 10 days into illness. And they're using the $3,000 a dose. In all of the independent trials that done it, all showed a trend to harm and no benefit. The only trials that showed benefit was the pharmaceutical-sponsored trials. And so that's literally what they're using. They're using an ineffective drug at $3,000 a dose. Now they have, obviously, they have monoclonal antibodies, which is the one thing that does appear to be effective, but it's really not available for most. And then they use another new drug, another novel agent, which is called baricitinib, which is used paired with this low dose of steroids. And so it's very meager what they're able to offer in the hospitals. And I'm surrounded. My whole last year and a half, I've seen people undertreated with disease because they're sticking to the NIH protocol. And it's absolutely ludicrous, this protocol. It's not what a real expert or doctor would employ. I mean, we if you look at our protocols, we have a number of agents, combinations of agents. By the time these patients get to the hospital, they're really quite sick. And to arrest the disease, you need to draw on a lot more than what they're employing in these protocols. And it's sad.
I'm speaking with ICU and lung doctor, Dr. Pierre Corey, and, you know, in our final remaining time this morning together, I wanted to ask you, are you finding that your colleagues that you are working alongside in these healthcare institutions here in Wisconsin, are you finding that they have the same conflicts that you do, I guess, it seems as if you've become kind of the crusader for, your patience. Whereas there are a lot of...
This conflict is felt by everyone. It's not just in Wisconsin. But yes, the people I've worked with have also felt overly restricted in how they can practice. And you know, I mean, there's been movements to try to call attention to this fact that, that it's going to hurt patients. I mean, you can't handcuff the doctors. I mean, you know, like I said, we can't fight for patients with one arm tied behind our backs. I mean, we have to be allowed to use our expertise, our rapidly accumulating experience and insights into this disease, which moves much faster than these Byzantine bureaucracies who have rife with conflicts and clearly don't have, unfortunately, the best interests of the patient at heart. There's much more incentives going on in those agencies. And so agencies don't treat people. Doctors treat people. And you got to let the doctors treat the people, not the agencies. And I'm telling you, that dynamic, it's solidified in COVID, and it's got to stop. It's got to be reversed.
Are you able to treat patients that you see in the hospitals here in Wisconsin with ivermectin or alternative protocols?
I was at some, and then that's changed since Farmageddon.
Okay.
They shut down ivermectin.
Wow. Wow. Well, I hate to tell you this, and it's more sadness for me than and our listeners than probably you. You can go back to your day, but I have to take a break, which means we have to say goodbye. But I am delighted that you were able to join me this morning. Thank you so much. Oh, I do have one last question. I know that you're originally from the East Coast, and because we established that in an earlier conversation. But so, what do you like? Do you like Wisconsin better than the East Coast?
Oh boy! Do you really want me to answer that?
Yes.
I found out. I didn't know I was going to stick out like a sore thumb here. I got to say, I just miss New Yorkers. I like living in Wisconsin as far as like my house and the traffic, that kind of thing. It's like an easier place to live, but I miss my New Yorkers terribly. They're just much more open, frank. They'll call it like they see it, say it like it is, and I just feel much more comfortable in that environment.
Well, you're my kind of guy, because that's how I am too. So I appreciate someone who's direct. There's, you know, I don't really like to beat around the bush. But well, thank you, Dr. Pierre Corey, as always. Keep fighting the good fight. I appreciate your time this morning. Hope you have a great day.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I will be back right before the 8:30 news on WSAU Feedback. And then, of course, after the news, your calls, 715-845-2155. Join me in the conversation.